Hi, it's Isaac E again from the Game Day Q Sports Experience. I hope you're enjoying my newest podcast, or Game Day Cube's newest podcast, Game Day Cube NFL Show. We are in the midst of full breakouts of each division. The AFC East is the upcoming podcast, which you are about to listen to. We did the AFC North as part of episode one. We will go through each division all the way to the NFC West, giving you the most comprehensive breakdown of each division, not only in regards to the team moves that were made in the offseason, my prediction for over-under win totals, and my thoughts on fantasy in regards to all these teams. So please subscribe to this new podcast, the Game Day Cube NFL Show. Also subscribe to the Game Day Cube Sports Experience, and you can find all podcasts as part of the Liogy Podcast Network at liogy.com/podcasts. That's liogy.com/podcasts. We have a lot going on in regards to podcasting, so we hope that you will follow us and subscribe and learn some insight, or at least some insight that I can bring for you in sports, fantasy and sports betting, and or just in general. So again, subscribe to the podcast, Game Day Cube NFL Show. Now let's get to the show. Hi, it's Isaac E again, and this is episode 2 of the Game Day Cube NFL Show. We hope that this is going to be one of the most listened to podcasts of the Game Day Cube Sports Network, or the Liogy Podcast Network. And we, in the first episode, did a nearly hour long breakdown of the AFC North. I'm not actually timing these, so maybe it'll be an hour, maybe this will be a half an hour, maybe this will be an hour and a half. But today's podcast with episode 2, we're doing the AFC East. So we're doing a full breakdown of the AFC East. We're going to start in alphabetical order with the Buffalo Bills. Going in with the Buffalo Bills, we'll just talk about how they spent a lot of time this offseason trying to improve the offensive side of the ball. They're looking for bigger things from the quarterback position. This is year 2 of Josh Allen, who they drafted in the first round, 7th overall last season. Josh Allen will be backed up by Matt Barkley, as the veteran quarterback Derek Anderson has retired. They brought in Tyree Jackson from the University of Buffalo to be the third string quarterback, most likely. He was undrafted, but he has a lot of potential and upside. They move on from Charles Clay, which was a ill-fated free agent signing a few years back. They brought in Tyler Kroft and Lee Smith, veteran tight ends, as replacements, and then drafted Dawson Knox and Tommy Sweeney. Dawson Knox is the potential of being a very good tight end in this league. And then Tommy Sweeney also has some potential coming out of Boston College. They got him in the 7th round. At wide receiver, they brought in Cole Beasley, John Brown, and Andre Roberts in free agency. They brought in Frank Gore, Chris Ivory, Sanders Perry, TJ Yeldon, and drafted Devin Singletary at running back. So it's a loaded backfield now. On the offensive line, they got all-pro center Mitch Morse. They bring in Ty Enschke, Joe Feliciano, LaAdrian Waddle, and they drafted Corey Ford. Corey Ford, they're hoping will end up being a starting tackle or at worst guard for them in the future. They got Corey Ford in the second round. AJ Gaines comes in as his second stint in Buffalo at corner. And their big addition was Ed Oliver from Houston to shore up that defensive line as they picked him ninth overall in the first round of the draft. The biggest concern for Buffalo is LeSean McCoy, and that is where a lot of the conversations are coming out of Buffalo. With the fact that they brought in five running backs, and there's a chance that Sonoris Perry doesn't make the team. I think I might have said Chris Ivory was brought in. I think that was a mistake. I think I meant to say just TJ Yeldon. So they right now, if you look at their roster, they have Gore, Yeldon, McCoy, and then Perry and Singletary. They drafted Singletary third, so in the third round, and probably unlikely wanting to cut him. Do they go in with five running backs? I don't see that happening. So something tells me that if you bring in four, you're not going to trade one of the people you just brought in. You're more likely to trade somebody that was an incumbent, and because McCoy is the only incumbent, it's more likely that they'll move on from him. And that's where a lot of the conversation in regards to Buffalo is around whether they are going to move on from LeSean McCoy. I have two sides of the fence with that. Part of me says I could see the move as being sensible, but you don't really know what you have with McCoy right now. Because if McCoy still has another 1,000-yard season in him and you trade him for a fifth-round pick, that doesn't make any sense. But if he doesn't have a 1,000-yard season, and they'll know that if he's falling off or he's not the same, you're not going to get a high draft pick for him anyways. And what's worth trading for a fifth round pick? I just think that Buffalo is kind of in those situations where they kind of probably should just keep LeSean McCoy and go from there and see where the season falls for them. At the end of the day, the season is going to be on Josh Allen. Josh Allen and Buffalo will face this season Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, and Sam Darnold twice, all from that 2018 draft class, proving that there's going to be no real place to hide because all these guys are in the same division. Now, especially, and then Josh Rosen, you might also face him. If he ends up winning a job in Miami, you might face him twice. So we're going to find out who picked the right guy, who didn't pick the right guy sooner than later amongst all of these picks. Now, Baltimore, I don't think really counts because Lamar Jackson was a late round pick. But as far as the other teams, Jets and Miami and Cleveland, it does count because in Buffalo, because they're all going to face off one into one another, and you're going to be able to make assertions of who made the right pick, who was a better player, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The Bills will need to not only improve in the passing game, but they will need their defense to play very well as well to be as successful as they hope to be. A very intriguing season in Buffalo, if you ask me. I'm very intrigued to seeing where things end up with the Bills. But we will continue talking about the Bills in a little bit after we do the other three teams in the division and go over what they did in the offseason. The Miami Dolphins brought in Josh Rosen in a draft day trade with the Arizona Cardinals. They shipped out Ryan Tannehill, who they picked 8th overall a few years ago. And Tannehill did get them to, well, they did have a playoff season with Tannehill, although he didn't play because he was hurt. But Tannehill had moments in Miami where he was good, but wasn't consistent enough. And the Dolphins, under new coach Brian Flores, decided to move into another direction. They didn't do anything major of note. The Danny Amendola, bringing him in from New England is over. He's now out. They re-signed Devontae Parker. They signed Dwayne Allen from New England to come in at tight end. They move on from Robert Quinn on the defensive line, but then they draft Christian Wilkins out of Clemson as a replacement. And that's basically all the notable moves that the Dolphins made in the offseason. The new Dolphins GM, Chris Greer, didn't really do a lot with this roster in filling noticeable holes that are still noticeable going into this season. Yes, the Wilkins pick was good out of Clemson, but not only did they lose Robert Quinn, they lost Cameron Wake as well. They've gotten younger, but they also have gotten a lot more question marks on their roster from the team that made the playoffs 2 years ago. Rosen, passer rating as a rookie was higher than a lot of notable Hall of Famers at 66.7. Even though he took a lot of flack for his play unfairly, I think because everyone started to basically any quarterback that was in that draft started being compared to what Baker Mayfield was doing, they all were considered disappointments. Sam Darnold had moments as well, but I think unfairly with Josh Rosen. A big question is Josh Rosen going to be starting quarterback, or are they going to go with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who they got in the offseason, mainly just keep the seat warm until they're ready to put Rosen in? So that's what happened in the offseason with Miami. Now moving on in alphabetical order, the world champion, the notable machine known as the New England Patriots, had a very good offseason, in my opinion, and improved from a Super Bowl team, which isn't good for anybody else in the NFL. They drafted Jarrett Stidham in the 4th round to bring him in at a quarterback, third-string quarterback behind Hoyer and behind, obviously, the one and only Tom Brady. But Stidham has an opportunity of possibly, as he develops over the next couple of years, being a quarterback in the future. Damian Harris, I know we sent out before with New England. Damian Harris was a steal in the 3rd round at running back. A very, very smart pick. Teaming him up with what they already have at running back allows them, again, New England loves to be dynamic at that position. That was just another smart pick by the Patriots. They bring in Demaryius Thomas in free agency. Philip Dorsett resigns. And N'Keal Harry out of Arizona State was a big pickup in the first round at wide receiver. They brought in Ben Watson at tight end to be tight end one. Dwayne Allen is out. But Ben Watson will have to be suspended for the first four games. He was suspended for violating the substance abuse policy, mainly because Ben Watson, as he mentioned, of why he was suspended, was thought he was retired and decided to come back and tested positive for, I believe, I don't know if it was official, but I believe it was for marijuana. Mainly because he didn't think he was going to play. So he did apologize for that, and he will have to sit out the first four games. But he will be back by the fifth game of the season. Michael Bennett comes in. Adrian Claiborne goes out. Michael Bennett still has some stuff left in him, I believe. Maybe in search for another ring. We'll see what they can get out of him in situational position spots for New England. I like the pick of Jojon Williams at corner. Gives him some depth at the position in the second round. The big concerns for the Patriots is tight end. Yes, Watson will be back by week five, but Ben Watson is a good tight end. He's not Ron Gronkowski. They actually even tried to trade for a tight end as of recent as a few weeks ago, but the trade fell through with Detroit. The tight end that they tried to pick up did not pass his physical. You could tell that New England's still worried about that tight end position. Another big concern is just straight complacency. Do they want to do this again? Do they want to win again? Do they want to go deep again? Every year the answer is yes, until proven wrong, but that is the challenge that faces New England again going into the season. The Jets' big splash in the offseason was their decision to bring in Le'Veon Bell, and on the offensive side, and then on the defensive side, C.J. Mosley at linebacker. They also started the season with new head coach Adam Gase, who apparently wasn't really happy with the free agent decisions by Mike Maccagnan. And in a power struggle in the offseason after the draft, in a very strange situation, Maccagnan was let go as Gase won the power struggle and was also able to bring in a GM of his liking. So now when you look at it, Adam Gase, although he's a head coach, he's almost de facto GM. So he has full control of what's going on the football operations of the Jets. Could be good or could be bad, mainly because he's never done that before. And I guess with his stint in Miami, you could say part of it was the team, part of it was maybe him. But how good is Adam Gase as a head coach? How good is Adam Gase as a football person? Well, we're going to find out, because we usually don't get third chances at coach in this league. So he's hoping that this one works out. Now, again, Le'Veon Bell comes in at running back. Isaiah Crowell is out, so they've definitely improved at that position. Trevor Siemian comes in at backup quarterback. Josh McCown is out as he's retired. Jamison Crowder and Josh Bellamy are in at wide receiver. Andre Roberts out. Chuma Edoga was drafted in the third round for offensive line. They drafted Trevon Wesco in round four at tight end. And their big draft pick was the third pick overall, Quinnen Williams, who has a ton of upside. They're hoping Aaron Donald-like upside at defensive line. He comes in. And they also get Jacque Polite in round three to also help on that defensive line front. They bring in Brian Poole at defensive back, and Chandler Catanzaro was picked up as kicker by the New York Jets, who also now are back to green helmets. So that's something else that the Jets are hoping to sport this offseason. When you look at fantasy going from up and down again in order, Buffalo, mainly because the running back position is so unsettled, there really isn't anything to look at there. I wouldn't put any stock in any of them, McCoy, Gore. Although, I think in very deep leagues, Devin Singletary, he's worth a pick in later rounds. I don't even if he's in drafts that you don't draft in deep, or you have a deep roster, he's worth somebody to stash, I believe, and picking him up and stashing him. I think as far as quarterback's concerned, I think that you can get some value out of Josh Allen at QB2. He wouldn't be my first QB2 pick, but he definitely should be on a short list, mainly because of what he can bring with his legs. He's going to get you 40 to 60 yards a game running the ball, and that will counteract his interceptions. So if you're able to get some yards and some touch and a touchdown pass here and there, he's worth 20 points, depending on how your scoring is settled in your league. He'll probably average somewhere around there, or maybe even higher. I just think there's some upside there at QB2. Again, not my first QB2 pick, but something that, again, you should probably keep on your short list in regards to Josh Allen. Tight end, again, until it's settled, there's really nobody that I would really go after. I think in a deeper league, Dawson Knox is somebody that you would, the draft pick in the third round is somebody that you'd pick and stash. I like Reuben Foster because of his year last year, and he seems to have a dynamic with Josh Allen at wide receiver 3. So that's my thoughts on the Bills and fantasy. Miami, I don't really like anybody. It's tough to say, but I don't like this roster. I don't like what Miami did in offseason. I don't think they improved their team at all. I think they're going to be way too unsettled at quarterback to trust any of their wide receivers. I don't necessarily like their running back situation. I don't necessarily like their tight ends either. I don't think there's any, like, oh my God, I have to have this Miami Dolphin player in any thought process in regards to fantasy. So I'm not saying stay completely clear. You might be able to find a player for death later in a late round, but I wouldn't put them on any of my short lists or any player that Miami has to offer for fantasy's concern. The Jets, in deeper leagues, I like Sam Darnold at quarterback 3. I think you can get value from him for him. And if he really improves and the Jets are as good as they hope to be, then it's a really good value. I like Le'Veon Bell at running back 1. I think he'll have a bounce back year. I think his legs will be great having a year off. I don't necessarily like any of their wide receivers, but I do like McCown. I mean, excuse me, I do like the quarterback in Darnold at that QB3 position. For the Patriots, and you can't never really go wrong with Tom Terrific at QB1. A lot of people will just say he's too old and pass up on him, so you might be able to get him for value later in a round. He's not my first QB1 position pick, mainly because of his age, and I fear him suffering from injury, but I'm not sure you can really, like, completely disregard him at that QB1 position. At wideout, I do like the pick of Harry. I think later rounds, I think he'll still be there. I think he's worth a flyer in the middle of the draft in fantasy. So he's a guy that I would also take a look at. I think the way the Patriots use their running backs with running back by committee, I don't necessarily like I don't like any of the running backs overtly. I just how they use them. It makes it very hard for me to pick one running back over the other. And since they went out and they got Harris out of Alabama, I think that does take away carries from Sony Michel. And remember, James White is also used in there. And then they can hit you with Rex Burkhead. And it's just too many different running backs to like one running back over the other. So that's why I would probably not go with them in any running back for New England ever in a fantasy situation. Just because you don't know who's going to get the carries. Wide receiver 3, I like Julian Edelman. And the reason why I don't like him at 2, he does get you catches, he gets you yards, but he doesn't really get you touchdowns. He's not really the guy that they target in the red zone. They usually go to other wide receivers. Edelman does most of his damage from 20 to 20. So he's kind of fool's gold in fantasy. You're like, oh, he's the number one target, but he's not scoring a ton of touchdowns. So therefore, he's more wide receiver 3 than anything. I think Ben Watson is somebody that you could stash, mainly because you can't play him the first 4 weeks. So therefore, he's definitely not tight end 1. In deeper leagues, I could see him at tight end 3. He's worth a flyer at tight end 2. But again, remember, he's missing the first 4 weeks. So that's my thoughts on fantasy. Now, Buffalo is over 6.5, but according to Westgate, but they're also minus 160. So a lot of money's riding on Buffalo. The line still remains minus 6.5, although it could move to 7 if the money stays as heavy as it's been on Buffalo. I'd even pick them at minus 7 over if I can find a book that has it at minus 7, so you're not getting at minus 160, you're getting more close to minus 110. I do like Buffalo over minus 6.5, mainly because if you look at their schedule, Miami, New England, and the Jets are the division mates. I can make a reasonable argument there'd be 3-3 there. They play the AFC North with Cincinnati at home early in the season. They get Baltimore at home late. They get at Cleveland, at Pittsburgh. Arguably, you could probably say they might win one. They just should win one of those games. Best case scenario would be 2, but let's just say they win 1. That gets you to 4 wins. Now, they play the NFC North. Or NFC East, excuse me. Dallas, Philadelphia. They get Philadelphia midseason at home. They're at Dallas on Thanksgiving. They play the Giants early in September at New York. And then they play Washington also at home midseason. They should get 2 wins there. That should get you to 6. Now, that leaves you with your like in conference. They play at Tennessee in October, and then they play the Denver Broncos. Yes, play the Denver Broncos at home in November. They should get 1 win there. That should get you to 7. This team should at least get to 7. They have potential to get to 9. But I don't think 7 is too much of a stretch for Buffalo. So that is where I think they'll most likely land. Miami has to deal with the fact that they're considered to be 5. They are predicted at under minus 120. So the thought by some of the money is right now lying on the fact that they'll probably not get to 5. They have the New England, Buffalo, and the Jets. Again, remember, that's the division. If I had to predict it, I'd say best case scenario, they win 2. So let's say best case scenario, they win 2 in division. Out of conference, Dallas, at Dallas early. Washington at home early. Philadelphia at home late, and then at New York. Let's say they get to 2. That gets you 5. Now you think intra-conference. They have to play the Indianapolis Colts at Indianapolis. It's probably a loss. And then they play the Chargers at home. They kind of got the rough end of the scenario having to play the Chargers at home. That definitely is not something that if you're Miami, you want it to see on your schedule, but that's what happens when you finish 7-9 in division. Even though this team is far worse than the team that went 7-9, they get to play a really, really tough team. And they get their likes in conference are the second place teams in the conference, 2 playoff teams, which doesn't bode the Dolphins any favor. So I say best case scenario, they're at 5. So in that situation, you'd always go under. So I'd have to say Miami would probably be under the number, under 5. And that's why a lot of the money is, the money right now is slightly riding on Miami to go under. The Patriots are at 11, but a tremendous amount of money, because they're over minus 150 at 11, is on them to be over 11 wins. And you can't really go against the Patriots because they own this division. It's basically preseason games for them every year. Until the rest of the division actually starts playing better, the Patriots will continue to dominate, so to speak, the division. The Patriots sit with the fact that they have a team that should, again, be better than they were last year. And that's something that is good when you're the defending Super Bowl champions. They play with their division and with, Buffalo and the Jets sporting the young quarterbacks, and Miami probably by the end of the season sporting Josh Rosen. They play Buffalo and Miami late at home to end the season. They play the 3 early in September at Miami, the Jets, and then at Buffalo. They play the Jets on Monday night, midseason, but they get 10 days in between before that game because they have a Thursday night game, home game at the Giants before they play at the Jets. They're going to win 5 games in the division. They might win 4, but unlikely Miami beats them in any of these games. It's unlikely that it's likely the Jets and Buffalo out of the 4, maybe they win 1. The Jets and Buffalo, I should say. So let's just say you put New England at 5. They have Cleveland at home midseason. They got Pittsburgh at home to start the season. Then they travel at Baltimore, at Cincinnati. That should be 3. That should get you to 8. Houston is one of your likes at Houston. And your other like in the division is Kansas City. They played them back-to-back in December. Kansas City's a home game. They play at Houston. So let's say they split there. 9. At Philadelphia in midseason after, but they get a week off in preparation for that game. Then they travel to Dallas comes to Gillette in November. Then they have, and I believe that Dallas game is the week before Thanksgiving, if I'm correct, and I am correct. So then they play Dallas before a week before they play on Thanksgiving, and then they play the Giants at home and then at Washington. That's probably 11, and that's worst case scenario. They could sweep the AFC East. They could sweep the AFC North. The Patriots over 11 sounds really, really good. So that's, if when you break it down, I like them over 11. Now the New York Football Jets. The New York Football Jets are in a kind of a litmus test of where they are compared to Buffalo. I think they're both in the same spot. So let's say they get the split there. Maybe they beat New England. Maybe they don't. Split Miami, maybe. Let's say they get three in division. Cleveland at home early on Monday night. Then at Cincinnati, at Baltimore late in December, and then Pittsburgh at home. Let's say worst case scenario, 2. It gets you to 5. Interconference, or so we've done division, you know, so out of conference. Giants at home midseason in the rivalry game. They play at Washington right after that. They play Philadelphia at Philadelphia in early October. And then they play Dallas at home in mid-October. I'm inclined to say 2 here. That gets you to 7. And then Oakland is your like in conference at home. And your other like in conference is the Jacksonville Jaguars. And they played them at Jacksonville in October. Jacksonville could be better than people think. And Oakland, never know. They got about 7 now, and then they were specifically expected to be 7.5. They tell you, Westgate and Vegas do a good job with these season win totals. Right on the number right there. Like the potential, I like the upside of 8. So I'm going to say they will get 8, and I like them over 7.5. So in recap, I like New England over 11. I like the Bills over 6.5. I like the New York Jets over 7.5. And I like Miami under 5. I think your division winner will be the New England Patriots. And based on schedule and the way things break out, I think a wild card possibility for either the Jets or Buffalo. And a lot of that will come down to how they play against one another. And that's where the first game of the season, although it's the first game of the season, and the last game of the season are going to be very, very important. And it's when they play each other. The Jets, Buffalo week 1 is going to be a very important game for both teams and how their season's going to go. And then I think the last game of the season where the Jets travel to Buffalo will be very, very important and may be a deciding factor for one of the teams and whether they make the playoffs or not. So I think that's where the wild card, if they get a second team, will be decided in those head-to-head matchups between the Bills and the Jets. But again, I think this is New England's division again to lose. There is always a possibility that the Patriots run into some issues without Gronkowski on offense, or maybe finally some play from Tom Brady that isn't up to not only the Patriots standard, but even Tom Brady's standard. Mainly the age finally catches up to him, where it opens the door for Buffalo or New York to slip in. But as of right now, you'd have to expect that not to happen, and that Brady and the Patriots still will be the cream of the crop in the AFC East. Which then makes the New England Cleveland game in midseason, where Cleveland travels to New England, a lot of fun, because it should have 2 teams that will win their division, 2 teams expected to go deep into January, facing off, and it will be a good litmus test for both. But this was the AFC East breakdown. going into the upcoming season. We will be back later in the week with a breakdown of the AFC South and the AFC West. And then in upcoming weeks, we will do the NFC divisions. And then we'll do a full NFL preview, talking about more bigger, wide-ranging stories going into the season. This is the Game Day Cube NFL show. And I am Isaac E. And I hope you subscribe to this new podcast. And also subscribe to the Game Day Cube Sports Experience. You can find all the Game Day Cube podcasts by searching Game Day Cube on every place that you listened to podcasts or your favorite place to live and listen to podcasts. You can also find the full list of Game Day Cube podcasts as part of the Laia G Podcast Network at laiag.com/podcasts. Again, I'm Isaac E., and I am signing off.